Davidson had also been around the block several times with General McNabb, and several times with McNabb and Castillo together. He had not been at all bashful to tell the general, A, that Castillo's idea that Bradley could be hidden at McCall made about as much sense as suggesting a giraffe could be hidden on the White House lawn, and B, that if Charlie was doing something interesting, it only made sense that Sergeant Major Davidson be assigned to do it with him, as the general well knew how prone Charlie, absent the wise counsel of Sergeant Major Davidson, was to do things that made large waves and got everybody in trouble, and that this was not very likely to be changed just because they had just made Charlie a light bird. Shortly after the final rites of Sergeant Krantz at Arlington National Cemetery, Sergeant Major Davidson and Corporal Bradley were en route to Buenos Aires. And shortly after going to Nuestra Pequeña Casa, while serving as the driver of a Renault traffic van, Corporal Bradley found himself participating in an unpleasant firefight in the basement garage of the Pilar Sheraton Hotel and Convention Center, during which he took down one of the bad guys with a Model 1911 A1 Colt semi-automatic pistol and contributed to the demise of another with the same 45 caliber weapon. Following that, it was Castillo's judgment that Corporal Bradley really deserved to be formally assigned to the Office of Organizational Analysis. He called the Director of National Intelligence, who called the Secretary of Defense, who called the Secretary of the Navy, who directed the Commandant of the Marine Corps, "Just do it, don't ask questions," to issue the appropriate orders. Top Secret Presidential, the White House, Washington, D.C. Duplication forbidden. Copy 2 of 3. Secretary Cohen, July 25, 2005. Presidential Finding. It has been found that the assassination of J. Winslow Masterson, Deputy Chief of Mission of the United States Embassy in Buenos Aires, Argentina, the abduction of Mr. Masterson's wife, Mrs. Elizabeth Lorimer Masterson, the assassination of Sergeant Roger Markham, USMC, and the attempted assassination of Secret Service Special Agent Elizabeth T. Schneider indicates beyond any reasonable doubt the existence of a continuing plot or plots by terrorists or terrorist organizations to cause serious damage to the interests of the United States, its diplomatic officers, and its citizens, and that this situation cannot be tolerated. It is further found that the efforts and actions taken and to be taken by the several branches of the United States government to detect and apprehend those individuals who committed the terrorist acts previously described and to prevent similar such acts in the future are being and will be hampered and rendered less effective by strict adherence to applicable laws and regulations. It is, therefore, found that clandestine and covert action under the sole supervision of the President is necessary. It is directed and ordered that there immediately be established a clandestine and covert organization with the mission of determining the identity of the terrorists involved in the assassinations, abduction, and attempted assassination previously described, and to render them harmless, and to perform such other covert and clandestine activities as the President may elect to assign. For purposes of concealment, the aforementioned clandestine and covert organization will be known as the Office of Organizational Analysis within the Department of Homeland Security. Funding will initially be from discretional funds of the Office of the President. The manning of the organization will be decided by the President acting on the advice of the Chief, Office of Organizational Analysis. Major Carlos G. Castillo, Special Forces, U.S. Army, is herewith appointed Chief, Office of Organizational Analysis, with immediate effect. Signed, President of the United States of America. Witness, Natalie G. Cohen, Secretary of State. Top Secret, Presidential. The identification of the bodies in the Sheraton garage and of two others Shortly thereafter, in the Conrad Resort and Casino in Punta del Este, Uruguay, pretty well determined the identity of the terrorists, and obviously they had been rendered harmless, as called for by the finding. This accomplishment, however, did not mean that the Office of Organizational Analysis now could be shut down, or that the finding could be filed in the presidential documents not to be declassified for 50 years, or that the OOA personnel could be returned whence they had come. Just about the opposite was true. The investigation had been going on in Nuestra Pequeña Casa for nearly 3 weeks. To say that no end was in sight was a gross understatement. The turning over of the rocks had revealed an astonishing number of ugly worms of interest to the Director of National Intelligence, the Department of Justice, the Internal Revenue Service, the Department of State, and other governmental agencies.
What we have here isn't an investigation,
Inspector Doherty, who was on the staff of the Director of the FBI and who had given the subject a good deal of thought, said very seriously the night before at dinner.
It's an investigation to determine what has to be investigated.
Doherty had reluctantly, another gross understatement, become part of the investigation only after the president had personally ordered the FBI director to loan the best man he had to OOA, not the senior FBI man who could be most easily spared. Edgar Delchamp of the CIA had replied,
"You got it, Sherlock."
Delchamp, too, had come to the OOA reluctantly, so reluctantly that when transferred from his posting as the CIA station chief in Paris, he had reported to Castillo only after he had stopped by CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, to put in for retirement. When Castillo found out about that, it had taken a personal call from the Director of National Intelligence, Ambassador Charles W. Montvale, to the Director of the Central Intelligence Agency to get Delchamp to put off his retirement for the time being. Montvale told the DCI that the President had personally ordered that the OOA, meaning Delchamp, be given absolute access to any intelligence the agency had gathered on any subject. Doherty and Delchamp had not at first gotten along. Both were middle-aged and set in their ways. Doherty's way, which had seen him rise high in the FBI hierarchy, was to scrupulously follow the book, never bending, much less breaking, the law. Delchamp had spent most of his career operating clandestinely, often using a fictitious name. There was no book for what he did, of course, because the clandestine service does not, cannot, operate that way. So far as Delchamp was concerned, the end really justified the means. Yet surprisingly, they had become close, even friends, in recent weeks, largely because Castillo had decided they were older than everybody but Eric Koshin. They regarded everyone else, including Castillo, as inexperienced youngsters, and were agreed that the president had erred in giving Castillo the authority he had given him. Castillo thought they were probably right. What Doherty, the night before, had called the investigation to determine what has to be investigated now was just about over. Castillo and Colonel Taurine had flown the OOA's private jet, a Gulfstream III registered to the Lorimer Charitable and Benevolent Fund, down to Argentina to quietly ferry Delchamp, Doherty, and some of the others, not to mention the results of the investigation, which now filled one small filing cabinet and a dozen computer external hard drives, back to Washington. Eric Koshin and his two dogs would go with them, too. His notes about the Iraqi oil for food scandal had provided keys to much of the information now on the hard drives. So far as Castillo, Delchamp, and Doherty were concerned, Koshin was going to Washington to serve as a sort of living reference library as their investigation moved into the databanks of the FBI, the CIA, and other elements of the intelligence community. So far as Koshin was concerned, however, he was going to Washington because there was a direct Delta Airlines flight from Washington Dulles International Airport to Budapest. It would allow him to take his dogs. There was no such flight from Buenos Aires. Cochin owned two Bouvier de Flanders dogs, a male named Max and a bitch named Maidkin. At 100 plus pounds, Max was time and a half the size of a large boxer. Maidkin was just a little smaller. There always had been a Max in Cochin's life since right after World War II, all of them named Max. Maidkin was a recent addition, a gift from the Lorimer Charitable and Benevolent Fund, not necessarily as a pet for Cochin, but as a companion for Max. Max's alertness in Budapest had warned Castillo in time for him to be able to use a suppressed Ruger MK2 22 caliber semi-automatic pistol to render harmless two men who had broken into his hotel room bent on his assassination. As Castillo later had put it, perhaps indelicately, to Edgar Delchamp, "I don't know how things are done in the spook world, but in the army, when someone saves your ass, the least you can do for him is get him laid." It had been love at first sight between Max and Maidkin, but the playful frolicking of two canines weighing more than 200 pounds between them had caused some serious damage to the furnishings of Nuestra Pequeña Casa. Although they slept on the floor in Cochin's bedroom, they mostly had been banished to the backyard and to the quincho, where they had sort of adopted Corporal Lester Bradley, sensing that not only did he like to kick a soccer ball for them, but while manning the secure satellite communication device, had the time to do so.